the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, the cost of a college education could be one of the most important financial decisions any family makes. We all know that the cost of college has been going up each year, and it's expensive. But yet, there's all kinds of ways that can be financed. It could be grants, it could be work programs. Sometimes it seems all too confusing. Joining me on the program is Kathy Ruby from College Coach. And Kathy, let's begin and talk in terms of financing a college education. There's work programs, there's grants, there's various government loan programs. What does a parent do? Let's say you have an Einstein in the family, and Einstein is graduating in May. Now you have to decide, okay, he's been accepted to several schools. What's the first thing a parent should consider?
Well, certainly you're going to want to look at what the bottom line is at each of those schools. So hopefully, if it's before May and the student Einstein has been accepted at a variety of places, hopefully the family has gone through the financial aid process where they've filled out the federal financial aid form and maybe an institutional financial aid form. They've had the student considered for scholarships at the institution. And so now what they need to really do is compare the bottom line at each of the different institutions, look at what the college says it will cost, do some research on the website to make sure that the estimate they're giving is accurate for the program your student is in and for the kind of dorm they're going to live in and the kind of board plan they might buy, and try to figure out what the true bottom line is at each institution.
So it's not only the cost of tuition, but it's also room and board, because obviously room and board in California might be much different than, let's say, room and board in Florida or someplace in the Midwest.
Yes, absolutely. And so you've got to look at all of those costs. And then the college will also, they'll tell you, they'll give you an estimate of what they think your students' books and personal expenses are going to cost. And those kinds of estimates can vary widely between institutions. You know, some institutions will say your student's going to have $3,000 or $4,000 of personal expenses, where another institution might say $1,800. So you really want to sit down with your student and try to figure out what's their budget going to be for personal expenses, and then look at that estimate from the school for books as well. The thing is you can get financing. You can get government-sponsored loans. You can get private loans that will actually cover room and board and those books and personal expenses and transportation. So you can get funding for room and board, even if your student's going to live off campus, because essentially when the college creates this cost of attendance, they're recognizing that, you know, the student has to have someplace to live and has to have food to eat while they're in college. So it doesn't matter whether they're living on campus or off, you want to factor in those costs.
You know, Kathy, something that some parents often overlook, and maybe this is also important for the student. So let's say you're looking at the cost of college education, you're looking at private versus public, and don't you think it's important to take a look at how much a student will make when they graduate? In other words, what are the prospects for the field of study, getting a job in that field, and what will they make? And the only reason I bring that up is I had a client whose daughter was very, very bright, got accepted to Stanford, but she was going to be a teacher, and her starting salary as a teacher, you know, would have been $40,000 versus a college education that would have cost $250,000.
Right. I mean, and there's not always, of course, a direct relationship. You know, there are other non-quantifiable parts of a Stanford education is what they would tell you, right? That it may make her an excellent teacher, but there are other things as well. But certainly, I mean, that is definitely something that families should be researching, but also having backup plans. Because, of course, we're also talking about 18-year-olds, right, who might change their mind. But we do encourage families to have conversations with their students about what kind of field are you going into, and what is the expected salary? What are the job prospects in that career? So there are great resources out there on the internet now. You know, we always send families to the Bureau of Labor Statistics Occupational Outlook Handbook. And honestly, it's just a great resource for kids to use to explore different careers and learn about the vast array of careers that are out there. Because, of course, 18-year-olds also, they know what they know, but they don't know quite a bit about what's really out there in terms of the work world. But yes, that's definitely, you know, every family has to approach that conversation in a way that's consistent with their values. So one family might say, nope, Stanford's not worth it if you're going to be a teacher. And another family might say, well, that is worth it, and we're willing to make these sacrifices to make that happen. So it really is very much based on the values of the family, but they should be looking at the numbers for sure.
So let's say that you have a child and you're looking at the cost of an education, both private and public. So what are the steps to look at in terms of financing? In other words, where the parent walks away and says, you know what, it's great that you've been accepted to a private college, but a public college is going to cost this, and this is all we can qualify, or this is the amount that we can afford to pay. What are the steps one should consider if you're going to have to borrow money for college and finance that education?
Right. So first, of course, you want to understand what your career earnings are going to be and be realistic about that. And then figure out what you're going to need to finance for each year and make sure to do the math and multiply it by 4 or 5 years. Also remember, I know this sounds incredibly obvious, but we often talk to families who are so caught up in the first one going to college, and they're willing to do anything to make that happen, that they've sort of forgotten that they have a couple more kids, right, that they might have to use financing for as well. So you want to look at what the cost of that financing is going to be once you've established how much financing you're going to need to use. There are essentially two different kinds of educational financing that'll be available to parents. When it comes to financing, using loans to pay for college, parents will often think, well, I'll just have my student borrow. And that works, but only up to a certain point can the student borrow on their own. So the government limits what a student can borrow in their own name to essentially $27,000 to $31,000 for a bachelor's degree. So that's how much a student can get in their own name from the federal student loan program called the Federal Direct Loan Program. And that's a good low interest loan. And, you know, if a student borrows $27,000 to $31,000 to get a bachelor's degree, that's very likely going to be manageable when they graduate. But beyond that, parents essentially and students have two choices. The first is there's a federal parent loan that the government makes available, not at a very advantageous rate. The rate has just been set for next year, and it's going to be 7%. And it has a 4.276% fee up front. So that's a fairly expensive loan, but it's easy to get. The government pulls the parents' credit, but they're just making sure they don't have any adverse credit. They don't look at FICO score or debt-to-income ratio. So you can actually borrow quite a bit from that loan. Or the other option that families have is for the student to get a private educational loan. But in order to do that, for most dependent undergraduate students who don't have income and don't have jobs and credit scores, they're going to need a cosigner. So the parent, it's very likely going to be the parent, so the parent's going to end up cosigning that loan anyway. So if you're looking at financing your child's education, you're not going to be able to push it off on the student. You're going to ultimately be responsible for it in the long run. So you want to make sure you fully understand what you're borrowing. And there are student loan calculators out on the internet. There's just no excuse for not understanding what your monthly payments are going to be, how much interest is going to be charged, because by the time you look at the loan you borrow and you pay it back over 10 or 20 years, then when you add the interest to the price of that private college or the more expensive option, whatever it is, it may not be worth it.
You know, Kathy, there are various government programs that are available to parents, and I'm trying to think of the name of the program. You may be aware of it, but once the parent borrows money, and a lot of times there isn't a lot of financial analysis in terms of the parent qualifying, but if the parent can't make the loan payments, you just can't default on the loan. The government can garnish your wages and even Social Security payments. Are you aware of that loan?
Yes, that's the Federal Direct Plus loan. it stands for Parent Loan for Undergraduate Students, although now it's available to graduate students too. So now they just call it the PLUS Loan. And so that's the loan where any parent can borrow on the student's behalf. So it can be a parent or a step parent or a non-custodial parent. It can be any parent. And the government will do a credit check. But as I mentioned, all they do is they look at that you don't have any adverse credit like bankruptcies or judgments or significantly late payments. So there is no debt to income check on that. So you can get in over your head very easily because they're not going to limit the amount that you borrow. I think a couple years ago, do you remember there was a presidential candidate? What was his name? Martin O'Malley, I think. He was the governor of Maryland, and he proclaimed that he had $320,000 of PLUS loan debt, or $360,000, something like that, to send his oldest two children to college. And he still had two more kids to finance. And so it's easy to get in over your head because they're not going to stop you when they think you've borrowed more than you can afford to repay. And then, as I mentioned, the interest rate's not great, currently at 7%. Last year it was at 6.31. The year before that it was at 6.84%. And then, yes, you have to repay it to the government. You can't discharge it in bankruptcy. And eventually, I mean, you can use income contingent repayment, which is one of the income-driven repayment plans that the government has available. But that will hold your payment to 20% of your discretionary income. And then if you can't make the payments, they will garnish your wages, they'll garnish Social Security. So yes, you can get yourself in over your head. And your student has no legal obligation to help you with that, because that, even though you borrowed it on their behalf, it's your loan, and they're under no legal obligation to help you.
Now, what about, I know some colleges have what they call work-study programs where you can get a job, maybe you're working at the library or doing something where you're paid a certain level of income that can help offset your college costs. What about those kind of programs or a combination?
Yeah, I mean, I think working for a student is an important way for the student to contribute to the cause. So work-study on campus, it's a form of financial aid. And so students who have financial need when they go through that financial aid process are often awarded work study. And the reason it's called that is because it's an actual federal program where the government is giving money to the schools to help them pay students to work on campus. So usually what the student will be awarded will be something like $2,000 or $3,000 in a year. And the amount that's awarded just represents the cap on what the student can earn during the year. It doesn't guarantee that the student's going to get a job. The student still has to look for a job and work the hours in order to get paid that money. And the way most campuses work that is it's really just a part-time job on campus. And so the student gets paid every couple of weeks or once a month. And generally, it's money that goes directly to the student, not to the actual bill at the institution. So most families, most students will be using that money just for their books and their personal expenses, or maybe, you know, they will have saved up from the summer to cover their books and personal expenses, and then maybe they save up their school year job earnings to actually put toward the bill. I mean, that's all part of a conversation that families should be having about what their expectations are for the student in terms of what they're going to save from what their earnings are. I have a colleague who, when she was in college, her dad's expectation, they would sit down at the beginning of the summer and they would look at what her jobs were going to be. And I think she worked on Cape Cod. And he would say, okay, I expect you to pay X amount, whatever it is. And if you don't save that up to pay, I'm not paying my part. And so she tells a pretty funny story of one summer when she just was having a little too much fun on Cape Cod and got three quarters of the way through the summer and realized she was going to be short. So she really had to she really had to work hard to make it work. But that's all part of expectations that parents can work out with their kids about what they want their kids to contribute. The problem with working today is that it's not going to make a significant dent. It's just a piece of what the cost of college is. And then actually just one last piece about that. Work study is awarded to needy students who've gone through the financial aid process, and those funds are limited. However, many colleges will allow students to work on campus even if they don't have a work study award. So lots of times they'll have certain jobs. Students who have work study usually will get priority in hiring, but many campuses have other jobs for students who want to work and may not have work study in their award. So it's all about contacting the student employment office, finding out what's available on the particular campus where your student is attending.
What about another alternative? And that is, for example, in our own firm, we hire interns. Most of these interns come out of junior college. We have two interns in our office now. They have chosen to go to a junior college for the first 2 years. They are working and getting paid, and they're also staying at home. So they're, instead of incurring debt going to college, they're actually working, earning money, and the money that they're earning is enough to pay for their junior college education before going on to a major college.
Yeah, I think that that is becoming a more regular path for students in today's world of the high cost of college. So certainly we're seeing more families who are making that choice. It's not the best choice for everyone. It does depend on the student, but many times from a financial perspective, it makes perfect sense. So our advice to students who are thinking along those lines, I mean, certainly there's no stigma attached to that. Nobody cares if you got your gen ed requirements done at the junior college and then transfer to a four-year institution. What they look at is, where did you get your four-year degree from, right? So there's no stigma attached. The key is that if you're going to attend a junior college first, you have to make sure you have a plan, that you're working with an advisor. There are many states that have articulation agreements between community colleges and the four-year institutions in the state. So they have very specific paths you can take and very specific admission routes you can take to get into a four-year college. Some states will have automatic admission to a four-year state university after you get your associate's degree from a particular community college. So definitely research your state to find out what programs they have for transferring community college students into four-year institutions. But absolutely, it's a good financial decision to make. The other good financial decision to make is if you can live at home. Because as you said, I mean, I think in California, room and board is somewhere around $15,000 a year. It's a little cheaper in some other states, but California is up there. And so certainly that's a great way to save as well.
I want to come back to something that you brought up. A mistake I see often made by parents is, let's say you have three children. And so your oldest, you're excited. You know, maybe that child gets accepted to a private college. Parents focus on getting the money to get that one child through school, not realizing a couple years later, they've got a couple more children coming up the line that are also going to be going to college.
Yes. And you just have to be brutally honest with yourself and with your kids about what you can afford. I mean, if you haven't saved and you've got three kids that you have to send through college, or if you haven't saved enough and you know you're going to have to use a significant amount of financing, you do have to plan for the whole thing. So you do have to plan to pay for college for all of your kids, not just one at a time. Related to that is, you know, you've got to look hard at your finances. And if it's not a blank check for your child, in other words, if you're not willing to make just any institution work because you can't afford it, make sure you're having those conversations with your kids ahead of time. And the families that I see do the best at this, and it actually doesn't matter how much money they make, but it's the families where the students and the parents approach the whole endeavor as a team. And that is important when it comes to the financing piece. So one of the things you often hear is, oh, parents, stay out of your child's college search, right? Don't be a helicopter. This is their search. And that is true. It is the student search. They have to run it. They're the one who's going to go to college. And that is true, except when it comes to finances. So you do have to, if you have limits, you want to set those ahead of time. And ideally, you're doing that in eighth and ninth grade when your kids are first talking about college. And what that means is, it doesn't mean that you have to take any college off your child's list, because you never know what a college is going to give your student until they've actually been admitted. So we would never say take a college off a list based on its sticker price, because you just don't know what the actual price is going to be. But what it does mean is you want to make sure to have a good range of options on your child's college list. Make sure you've got the in-state public option that you know you can afford. If they're going to apply to private colleges, make sure they have a few where it's going to be very easy for them to get into that private college, because for that private college, your student is a rock star, and that private college is likely to offer merit scholarships to your student because they want to entice them to enroll. So make sure you have good financial options on the list, and make sure you're conversing with your student about that ahead of time, not in April of senior year, because that's too late by then, because what they have then is just a bunch of offers in hand, and none of them may be affordable, or they may have expectations to attend their top institution when you can't afford it.
So if I'm a parent, and let's say I've got a student graduating from high school, what are the steps? Are there deadlines, Kathy, or things that a parent should be made aware of when they're looking at these finance options, whether it's going to be financial aid, it's going to be a direct loan, or even a scholarship?
Well, I'm going to step back 1 year, if that's okay. And then we'll talk about the graduating senior. So if you're beginning the college search, so you have a rising senior, so your student's about to finish their junior year, your job now is to research each of the institutions that your student is considering applying to make sure your student is meeting all of the appropriate admission deadlines in order to be considered for scholarships, and then in order to meet the financial aid deadlines, which usually fall in the winter, but the financial aid form becomes available in the fall of the senior year. So for a rising senior, the key is that you're following behind your student and you're researching each of the colleges to make sure they're not going to miss any of the deadlines. Now, for the seniors who have just graduated and they've chosen their institution and now it's time to start arranging financing, most of the applications that have to take place for parent and student loans, they all happen in the June and July timeframe, because what will happen is that the college usually sends their first bill in July, and it'll be due in August. And so you can use that bill to really figure out what you might need to finance. And make sure, too, that you're considering payment options that the college offers. So you may not have to borrow a loan if you can afford to pay monthly. And most colleges do offer payment plans for no interest, usually just an annual enrollment fee of, you know, $60 or $70, where you can pay, you know, you can figure out what you owe and you can pay it over 10 months or 12 months. So make sure you're looking into those as well. And all that information is available on the college's website, and they're usually sending you information about that during the summer.
And are there any particular programs that you find that are more favorable towards the parents, whether it's interest rates, loan payments, or any other means that make it more financially achievable?
Well, we don't favor one or the other. What I would say is when we talk about parent financing, we want parents to look at all of the options they have. So there's the PLUS loan. Now, the advantage of the PLUS loan is that it is easy to get, and it does have, if you can afford it, flexible repayment options if you need them. It also has insurance built into the loan. So if, God forbid, something happens to the student or to the parent, the loan is just discharged by the government with no tax consequence. Private loans are a little riskier in that if you have excellent credit and you're co-signing a private loan for your student, you might get a better interest rate than the PLUS loan. But the trade-off is you're not going to have as flexible a repayment plan. So if you're somebody who knows you're going to be able to afford to repay this loan, you're not worried about it, you might look at private loans if you have excellent credit, because you might be able to get a better interest rate and better fees than on the PLUS loan. But you have to be willing to take the risk that this is now a private loan that has to be repaid. And you also have to understand what the insurance part of those loans are. Some lenders offer a discharge if something happens to the borrower or the cosigner, and then other lenders don't. So that's part of what you have to research. And then many families will also compare those two options to using home equity or other kinds of financing options you might have, whether it's using equity in your home or some other real estate that you have. So that can often be cheaper. Those home equity loans in today's environment, the interest rates might be lower and you might be able to deduct the interest, whereas you might have limited deduction possibilities for educational loans because you're only allowed to deduct $2,500 a year in student loan interest and your adjusted gross income has to be less than $160. So some families will look at home equity as a cheaper way to finance, but of course, then you have to understand you're wrapping up equity in your home for your child's education. One last little piece. Some families will look at retirement account loans and think that that might be a good way to pay for college. And we generally will warn people against that, as I'm sure you probably would too, in terms of, number one, the amount you can get is limited. Number two, they're only going to give you 5 years to pay it back. And if you can make payments over 5 years, you're pretty close to being able to do a payment plan with the college. And then lastly, of course, while the interest rate looks good, it's actually more expensive because you're going to pay taxes twice on that money. You're going to pay the loan back with post-tax money. And then when you take the money back out later on during retirement, you're going to pay tax on it. So that's just to get that out there too, because a lot of people turn to that for college financing.
Kathy, are there any books you would recommend for parents? I know you often mention the Bureau of Labor Statistics Occupational Outlook Handbook. So that allows a parent or maybe a student to look at the job possibilities and pay scale for the profession they're thinking of studying for. Is there anything else you would recommend?
It's a book that was written by a colleague of mine several years ago, and I think they're just issuing a new version of it. It's called The Financial Aid Handbook by Carol Stack and Ruth Vedvik. And what they do a great job with is really talking about the importance of the college list when it comes to paying for college. So most of what determines what you're going to pay for college is which colleges are on the list that your student is applying to, because it comes back to you want to try to apply to colleges that are most likely to give you scholarship money. As they put it, you want to apply to colleges that are reaching for you as opposed to colleges that you're reaching for, because those colleges you're reaching for are the least likely to give you a generous scholarship to attend there. So yeah, it's called The Financial Aid Handbook, and it's by Carol Stack and Ruth Vedvik.
And finally, Kathy, as we close, if our listeners would like to find out more about the work and coaching you do, how can they do so, please?
Well, the College Coach website is pretty easy to remember, www.getintocollege.com. And we have a whole array of college admission advisors and college finance experts available to help families through this process.
Well, listen, Kathy, I want to thank you for joining us on the program. All the best, and I hope you'll come back and talk to us again.
All right. Thanks very much, Jim. Great to talk with you.
Well, I hope you found that information helpful. You know, one of the books that Kathy mentioned, the Bureau of Labor Statistics Occupational Outlook Handbook, or their website, mynextmove.org, is a very good place to start, because a lot of times you're thinking of going to college and maybe junior hasn't really made up his mind or her mind in terms of what they want to be. This gives you a good idea what the job prospects are for the profession and what you're likely to make as you enter into that profession. But hopefully you'll find that when it comes to financing college, remember, and especially if you have several kids, it's going to cost a lot of money. And what you want to do as a parent is minimize those costs. You have a lot more options today, and we hope these programs have been a help. Until we talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.